Hey, this is Max from the Arkells, and you're listening to Underground Sports Philadelphia.
Sports, we're live,
and I think we are good. What's going on, everybody? We are live with Underground Sports Philadelphia, episode number 99. Got a lot to talk about today. Dom's back.
Hey,
he came underground from the above ground. But before we get started, got to give a shout out to our sponsors: Main Auto LLC, Hoffman Farms and Greenhouses, Ducharme's Pro Foot, which we will be back at Ducharme's getting our Ducharme's grind on next Saturday. Our show will be at Ducharme's. Security 21, Wainwright Bernhardt Funeral Home, and Paul J. Gillespie Incorporated. Dom, catch the people up. What's been going on with your life? Besides grinding on Rocket League, you know.
Yeah, I've had a lot of time to do that because, you know, I was sick for a while, and then I had some stuff go down, and, you know, I had to take care of that. Work was getting a little stressful, so I decided to, you know, focus on that, everything. But that's all going good now, so, you know, I'm finally back. Oh, I also had a trip that I had scheduled for a while, so I had to take off a weekend for that. Come on, man, I went to the Poconos.
This man went to the Poconos.
But, yeah, no, it's good to be back, happy, ready to talk
to
you.
You went to Vermont, too, in that time, didn't you?
Yeah, but I was on some shows in between then, so...
Dom's just
this is Dom's first show of 2019.
Mountain Man.
Yes. Yeah, and we're like halfway through the month, so.
Hey, well, you know what they say.
Better late than never.
Hey. Happy New Year, guys.
Sixers Saturday, as we always do. Great win against the Pacers.
Statement win against the Pacers.
For sure. And Embiid plays with a stiff back.
And he's still.
And he's still balled out.
Do you have the box score up?
I can get you that right now.
Yeah, I missed, like, most of the first half. I watched, like, the end of the second quarter, and then I watched the whole second half.
You watched the good parts.
Yeah. they popped off.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was a good night. Yeah, Joel still had – he was 9 for 19, so not the best of shooting. 2 for 7 from 3, but he still had, what, 22 points. 13 rebounds, 8 assists. What is that? Is that his highest assist count of his career or of the season or something like that?
I feel like I remember him having a higher one.
I forget what his career high is. 16
at one point. I think Joel's impact in games like this is going to always be more, especially considering he had the sore back, which is like a little concerning that, you know, we're again just trotting out a guy because it's a nationally televised game.
The tweet was great.
And beat again. With Joel, I think his impact in games like this is especially now with Jimmy on the team, is going to be more defensive. Like, I think the unspoken thing about this game was how bad Miles Turner was made to look and how Vic was shut down by Ben and Joel.
Oh, Vic looked terrible.
Yeah, I mean...
Vic looked terrible.
I mean, the Pacers in general didn't really look good. They were hanging around in that first half, and a lot of people were... I don't know. It's hard to, like, listen to fans as they're talking about the game as it happens because people are very reactionary, but, like...
So many knee-jerk reactions.
But, like, first of all, Pacers were 15-5 at home. Good team. They're above us in the standings. Now we're level with them, of course, but...
That's also because of our slow start to the season.
Yeah, but, you know, and they've had an easier schedule, you could say. But regardless of that, like, it's still a good team, and it's not like we're getting blown out. I don't know.
No.
I don't get the frenzied reactions about...
It was good to see a good Jimmy performance as well. 10 for 17. You know, he's a high-volume shooter, but, you know, you don't see him become that efficient most nights. So, you know, he 10 for 17, 27 points, and he filled up the stat sheet, you know, eight assists, 5 rebounds, 3 steals.
Arguably his best game as a Sixer.
Exactly.
Definitely up there. I think, too, we saw the staggered lineups a little bit. saw Jimmy get a lot of buckets, like when it was really just him out on the court, you'd say, like, offense running through him. A lot of cuts to the basket, which was nice. This was like the blueprint for what I would imagine playoff Sixers to look like. Staunchy defense. We slowed the pace down. We're normally like a 102 pace team. We're at 98, which isn't like a huge difference, but, you know, you're talking definitely slowing the game down. That's also the Pacers game style as well. They like to slow it down. And I think if you're talking like a slug match, I think we win because we have one of the top defensive players in the league in Joel Embiid, and Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons respectively are some of the best in their respective positions at defense.
We had a good I don't want to cut off your...
What did we have?
I was just going to say we had a good TJ and Jonah night as well. Like, we had some bench production that was good.
Yeah, Jonah's are good in his
two offensive rebounds is like Jonah's really important.
Jonah's become Kyle Korver.
Yeah,
honestly,
he had
he's 2 for 3 from 3, which was really nice to see.
And that's been really what you've seen from him. Like, look, if Jonah's going to keep giving us these 15-minute spurts, I'm fine. Yeah, that's great. You know, that's exactly, I think when we saw him coming over this summer, this is kind of the Jonah Bolden we expected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to be a little patient with him, and it wasn't, I'll be honest, was not looking great in, like, November. But again, it's November, and it's a lot to adjust to.
He's easily
to,
taken over the backup big minutes from Amir Johnson. He's more athletic.
You don't even see Amir touch the court anymore.
Yeah, which, great.
more players out of the
rotation. I mean, this is when I went and watched the Hawks game, I think that like Amir should have been on the floor because it was apparent that nobody was getting it done. Bolden had an off night. Chandler wasn't playing well. I mean, but Amir wasn't even dressed because he had a migraine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can see obviously that Amir's not the most reliable. And when he is on the court now, it's apparent that there are better options. So,
yeah,
I'm okay with that.
This is how we'll beat teams in the playoffs. I think is if we slow it down. I get that with Ben, like you want to push the pace a lot with him because he's so great in transition, and there's just so many ways for that to break positively for the team. But I do also think there's something to be said about when this team is locked in on defense. I don't know how teams are going to score more than like 105. You know, like it's just. When you have three really good defensive players, and again, Joel Embiid anchoring that as, for me, he should be defensive player of the year. Reggie Miller was saying that Miles Turner should be defensive player of the year. I don't know where the hell he got.
Reggie Miller's just looking at the league leader's stats column and sees
not
that
even
he's
that.
Looking
he just,
at the Pacers.
He just said that, well, the Pacers' defense is good, and it's anchored by Miles Turner. Like, first of all,
that's
relax.
Just because he's the blocks leader. And
it's
the Pacers.
Stupid, dude.
It's
like, come
ridiculous.
On. Like,
that's a lie.
Come on. It's in my mind, defensive player of the year is going to come down to Paul George and Joel Embiid. Because I don't think Gobert's had a good enough year. In my personal opinion, Embiid probably should have won last year. I think Gobert and the Jazz, they had a historic year. That's why they won, but Embiid should have won last year. Feels like Embiid's going to be in the conversation for his entire career and is just going to get, you know,
one thing I noticed
fall short every time, which is cool, but I'd like him to win at least one defensive player of the year because he deserves
he
it. He's
he
a monster.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, dude. It's just like, he's having another stellar year, and it feels like he's not getting recognized for it nationally.
It's like Drew Brees.
Like, that entire time during the game, here were the three Sixers talking points. Well, they're getting into this tough stretch of games, 11 games. Reggie Miller moaning about Joel Embiid's back, which I kind of agreed with, and, like, the Butler nonsense. That was all they talked about.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Oh, the national media never likes to give any Philadelphia sport credit, let alone the Sixers. So, you know, because there's so many things that have tarnished
none
our...
Of any of that is not giving them credit, though. It's just like, dude, like, there's more to talk about than just the fact that we have a tough schedule. Like, they belabored that point. No one walked away from watching that game not knowing what our next 11 opponents are. Because they actually did this thing, too, where they had, like, a graphic made up. And this is another one of my weird pet peeves is stop with the graphics on every broadcast because they're stupid and they're just out of place. Like every time they shoehorn in, the NFL is the worst with this.
Oh my God.
We're just shoehorning in these weird graphics and cartoons in the middle of the game. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, do you have a budget that if you don't spend just goes away? Like, and you're just throwing money at stuff? I don't get it. Like, ESPN's laying people off, but they have people devoted to making pirate ships of old Buccaneers jumping off. Like, what? You know, but they had this whole graphic of the calendar for, like, the next month, and they were going so fast that Kevin Harlan couldn't keep up. And he's just like, and the Spurs, and then it's like three games. He's like, and then the Thunder, of course, and then it's like, Jesus. Like, come on, man. Just why? That's... What? 2019 resolution for all broadcast companies is stop with shoehorned graphics into my sports broadcast. I don't want to see it.
Hey, let's get it going. Let's get it going. Start a Twitter poll. Who's with us?
I don't want to see a cartoon field goal kicker kicking it through the post, and every time the ball gets set down, it's a new stat about some
Remember that one that ESPN put out? I think it was ESPN. Or no, probably not.
Probably was.
When last year, when the Eagles were playing the Falcons, and they had that like bird nest with like each of the birds.
That's what they did this year. When the Eagles were playing the Rams, I want to say on Sunday Night Football, they had like the Eagles like dead in the field, like it was like George Washington crossing the Delaware.
It's so Corey weird, Clemens, man.
Like laying in the field, holding his leg like dead, and
it's so just strange. I don't get like I just want to know whose like job title that is and who is the creative force behind that, because it's just, they never make sense. They're always just like outrageously just thrown in, and I don't know why. Because I don't know anyone that's like, oh, that was cool.
The worst one was Jason Witten and. With Zach Ertz and like the Philly cheesesteak cheese sauce and the barbecue sauce.
Yeah.
That was horrible. Horrible.
So just be better is what I'm saying.
One thing I noticed about the Sixers game, to kind of bring it back.
I just want to talk about this forever.
We're starting, at least in my opinion, we're starting to see, you know, Brett kind of understanding how to work with Ben Simmons in offensive sets to maximize, you know, his impact into the game with all the different kind of lineups. You know, when you have Mike Muscala and TJ in the game with Ben, you know, you start seeing Ben act more as a power forward who can pass now instead of, you know, the guy who's the primary ball initiator. You're starting to see Ben kind of give it up to TJ every now and then when we win a defensive rebound and we bring it up the court for a settled offense. It's like if we have a chance to fast break, you give it to Ben and he gets into the open court. But if we don't have that initial fast break outlet pass, you're giving it up to TJ who brings it up the court. Ben gets himself on the block, and then you can run that kind of offense where, you know, you set a floppy pick down for JJ, like Muscala does that, and then fades to the corner. Ben gets a post up, gets by his guy, kicks it out to Muscala. He's got a couple corner threes in that game. He was 3 for 4. You know, those are the good Muscala nights. When he's getting corner threes, just like TJ, because neither of them can shoot threes from the top of the key or from the wing. They have to be in a corner.
It's the same with Wilson Chandler.
Yeah. So, you know, you're starting to see these offensive sets run with all of these guys where now they're getting open in the corners, because – even if Ben is at the top of the key, he has all that space to work with now. Yep. You have space for a pick and roll there and then a down screen, and then somebody else is kind of just standing in the corner just like floating around waiting for the ball movement. And Brett's really getting everybody involved. You're seeing Jimmy Joel pick and rolls now more. The dribble handoff is being used a lot more. JJ's not just doing it with Joel now. Everybody else is starting to understand how to do it. So This 11-game stretch that we still have now, I think, is going to be a real good time to practice and get ready for the playoffs and understand how to really just hone in on our offense. And then once they get that, the rest of our schedule, which is super easy, you know, we beat up on teams because we understand what they're understanding what they're doing. So
it's almost like people should have been patient is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, 100%.
Yeah, Muscala had a big block, too. Yeah. Led to a nice bend.
Oh, my God, that thing was
just
vicious.
Swatted it. Ben went the other way. I mean, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think this is the blueprint going forward for big games like this. I don't know if it's going to work against every team. The reason this works so well against Indiana is because it really is Oladipo out there.
Yeah.
He's really the one dependable offensive weapon that they have. Outside of that, they struggle.
The Pacers have like an odd big man problem too, because I don't think you can play Turner and Sabonis at the same time.
Well, Sabonis is like a sixth man this year.
Yeah, and you don't know who really to start, because I honestly think he could start.
That Sabonis was probably.
That was a big thing, too, with Sabonis coming off the bench, this year he's averaging 15.5 points a game.
He was Crystal, burning Embiid a few plays. Yeah.
Crystal Rich brought this up on the Sixers Outsiders after the game. We held him to 6 points.
Yeah.
So that was huge.
Somebody made a tweet that I kind of laughed at. It was like, it almost seems as if a team with three All-Stars is better than a team full of Corey Josephs. And it's the truth. You know, you got Oladipo, who kind of puts the team on the offensive back.
Mm-hmm.
Miles Turner is basically the defensive guy. And then you got a bunch of other guys who are pretty much just role players. Bogdanovich was getting cooked all night on defense. And basically all he is a three-point shooter on the offensive end. Darren Collison's a facilitator three-point shooter. Corey Joseph just...
Thad's old.
Thad. What does Thad do now?
I mean, like, Thad had a good night.
Like, yeah, he Thad did. Had a good night. But somebody's going to pop off. Not everybody. You got Doug McBuckets going in the game. Like, come on now.
We have upgraded Doug McBuckets in... Landry Shamet, that's the new Dougie McBuckets, baby. I mean, we're going to see. We play the Thunder today, which is going to be exciting.
I like that.
It's a tough matchup. Really excited to see how we play with Paul George.
Hey, man, Zubac popped off against the Thunder.
I'm worried about Embiid's back a little bit, if I'm being honest, just because... Like he and they were talking about it during the broadcast about how he said it's just something that sort of, you know, comes and goes. It's not necessarily like if he bends a certain way. It's just kind of just general soreness. That worries me because we need him to be Mr. Dependable, especially for this stretch and then obviously for playoffs. I'd like ideally, obviously, not want him to have to sit out any of these games over these next few weeks just because I think they're that important. And I think we want to get as many reps in against these really good teams.
Agreed.
Especially Joel himself. Like, he'll be upset if he has to sit out. But so hopefully, you know, he puts in a – he's able – I thought he played really well considering, you know, literally every time he was off the court, he was getting stretched and icy hot.
You could see him
wincing. Shaq had a great icy hot plug, like, when they were talking about it. But, I mean, good performances all around. Tough to be upset.
Expectations for today's game?
Sixers by 90, I think, is probably fair.
I mean, they almost did that a couple of nights ago.
I think
two games combined, we've beaten teams by like 65, 70
points. We're kind of in a good spot right now with our momentum, and the Thunder just lost to the Lakers, and they let Kyle Kuzma and Zubac kind of just kill them. I think if Joel's feeling good tonight, he's gonna torch the bigs, and that'll help everybody else get their game going. If that's the case, I think the Sixers win by six.
We got a Ben Simmons emoji tweet. Dunk on Westbrook today. That's the first reply.
I think that Russell Westbrook's emotions get the best of him in this game. And it kind of affects his game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't forget the Embiid Westbrook.
Yeah, we got to kind of just focus on Paul George and kind of limit him, because if he's getting going, then Westbrook will kind of get his game moving as well. So if you limit that, Westbrook will try to do it all himself, and then he'll get angry and things will go in our favor.
Tip-off is in an hour and a half.
See, what I'm hoping for is we win and then Embiid hits Westbrook with a... Bye. Go home.
Oh, man. It would make me so happy.
that being his post-game tweet.
Yo, that's another thing. Trash talking Embiid's back. And I think we needed that. You saw, like, he went in that slump this year. It was because he kind of, like, kept to himself. And he was going through that, I don't like shooting threes. I'd rather just chill in my house with my girlfriend than go out kind of deal. Like, now
he's back
and... I think that's going to help his game and the Sixers as a team, because I feel like we kind of lost our MO a little bit, and that's what our MO was. Mm-hmm. We were like, not the bad boys, but we were that team. Cocky. That like, yeah. And now that that's back, yeah.
Last bit of Sixers news.
Got their swagger back.
I don't know if you guys saw Markel was staying off social media last night and retweeting all of his old tweets.
I did not,
including
see
the "you can't trust no one" tweet.
I think I unfollowed Markelle Fultz.
I don't care.
Same. Me either. But that initially means we're getting Markelle news. Is when he retweets his old tweets.
It's about time, because he was supposed to be reevaluated, and we were supposed to get an update on that like 3 weeks ago, and we still haven't.
His update they're just delaying surgery.
Yeah,
and we're gonna have to pay him still, and it's gonna screw us this summer. That's the update.
Let me just trade him. Yep. You gotta trade him for whatever we can get, and that's that. And I don't know what we can get.
He's probably the only option at this point, because he's probably getting surgery. that seemed like the initial thing with thoracic outlet syndrome. Yeah, I mean, at this point, you're just behind the ball even more. And now the biggest issue with him is this $10 million and his cap hold for the summer when we're trying to sign free agents and make deals and trades or whatever we're trying to do. If we can't let loose of him, I mean, it's just going to hamper our ability to maximize the roster in our most crucial year of this century. You know?
Agreed.
So, hey, whatever, no biggie.
Before we move on out of the NBA, did you see the thing that went on Twitter the other day when from the ESPN on TNT or NBA on TNT? Shaq and Ernie were talking about something. They were saying some stuff like, "What do you smash?" Like something that you could like really, really eat. And then Ernie goes, "I don't know what I could smash. You know what I smash? Tricks." And Shaq's face is priceless. Shaq goes, and Ernie's like, "Yo, I ate a whole box of Tricks the other night." And then everybody on Twitter's like, "Oh, Ernie's a pimp. I see what's going on. You know what I smash? Tricks." Yeah, I was dying. And I had to think about it for a second because I'm just like, he's talking about cereal. Like, I get it. Like, and then, like, I go into the comments and I'm like, oh. And then I started dying because of Shaq's reaction. And Shaq's just like, he's like shaking his head, looking mad confused.
I will say cereal late at night, great snack.
Yeah. Oh, you know what cereal I want to get? Have you seen the Cinnamon Toast Crunch Churro cereal?
That's dessert, bro.
It's churros. And it's just...
You're just eating a bowl of churros?
Like mini, like...
That sounds awful. That sounds like an awful experience. I'm such an old man when it comes to cereals.
What do you eat?
I love Frosted Mini Wheats. That's like my cereal.
You need to get that fiber in your diet.
I do, bro. What's up with it? I got fiber. I don't have problems because I eat my fiber. 2 times a day. Regular.
What else?
Honey Bunches of Oats. That's a classic for me.
That's a good one, though. I like that.
I like rice checks, Frosted Flakes, you know, like some Honey Nut Cheerios.
That's a good one.
I don't get really too deep into the sweet. The sweetest I'll go is like Lucky Charms, because like that's like a nice late
Lucky
night
Charms.
Snack.
I'm not really high on Lucky Charms.
Well, that's because you're wrong.
Nah, I don't. There's better ones. There's better cereals. Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Golden Grahams.
Golden Grahams are good. Golden Grahams are good. Cinnamon Toast Crunch is all right.
Honeycomb.
I haven't had Honeycomb. It's not a big, like, honey cereal guy, because it was just, I don't know.
What else? Oh, I like Special K with the strawberries.
That's good.
Have you ever had the one with the almonds? Special K vanilla almond?
No.
Take that and some vanilla almond milk. That's fire.
You know how you milk an almond?
Huh?
Do you know how you milk an almond?
How I milk an almond?
Do you know how they do it?
No.
They put them all in this big sack, and they just flood it with water, and they just wring it out.
Yeah. Really?
So you're just getting—it's really just almond, like,
almond water.
Water,
but they call it almond milk.
Hey, man, it's good.
It's fire.
Yeah,
I love almond milk because I was a big milk kid.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a big almond milk guy.
I don't know, my mom went through a little thing where she was buying almond milk over milk for a while, but now she's buying 2%, and I'm super happy. So,
nah, I'm on the almond milk shit, you know. On that vanilla
language.
We good. I'm just telling it. I'm just telling it how it is.
Yeah, you can say that word on TV now.
I eat pears now. I don't watch TV.
Yeah, you can say that word on TV now.
Lifted.
Honestly, what's even the deal with it? You know.
Yeah, I agree.
At the end of the day, like, it's a word. Like, you know, like, you see, we act like our kids never hear curse words. I never got that as a kid and as an adult. Like, we act like parents have never, like, accidentally let one fly around their kid. Like, so what, man? Like, as long as I'm not using it, like, outwardly, like, you
like
know?
A freshman in high school would, because they want to try to, like, look cool or older, so you know every other word is the F or S word.
Jeez, I'm right here, Dom. You don't have to blame me like that, right?
I think we were all guilty of that. Yeah. We were all guilty of it.
Yeah. I got really embarrassed once because I accidentally swore in the hallway. I didn't even really accidentally. I was just telling a story. And I cursed really loudly, and there's a teacher right next to me. And I really thought I was about to get a write-up for, like, the dumbest thing you could, like, just for swearing in the hallway. But he just stared at me. He was like, "You shouldn't say that in the hallway." I was like, "Yeah, you're right. Sorry."
Yeah, I'm on the other side of the coin now, and I'm just like, I hear my students drop the word, and they don't even realize I'm listening. And I'm like, "Yo!
You're like,
watch
what?
Your mouth."
You're like, what?
I'm like, watch your mouth. Yo!
Knock it off, man. Y'all want some Special K? That's a different type of question. You might get that in your part of the woods. Y'all want some Special K? 20 a bag.
No comment.
Other than the High Street Bulls, I don't know.
You gotta talk about the sending districts, not the.
Bro.
You make your way. You make your way to Laurel Lake.
You have to go to SNJ Pizza one time because that's the best pizza spot around here.
Right down the street. My mom used to work in the. She was like a social worker for a while. That was like her first job out of college. She worked in Millville, and that's where they used to get all their like pizza from. And she told me about it.
Best pizza, dude. It's so slept on. It has the best sauce. I'm a big sauce guy, of course. It's like drip sauce. Yeah, look at me.
Yeah.
Wearing the Sauce King himself, Joel Embiid. Slowly, not even slowly, rapidly becoming one of my favorite human beings. He was already like top 10.
I can't watch anything like with Joel in it without like smiling. Like I was watching on ESPN Plus the documentaries about the rookies year one.
And
there was the part with Mo Bamba, and he got a FaceTime from Joel because they were playing the Sixers that night. And like as soon as I saw it was Joel calling him, I got so happy.
Like because you know it's gonna be funny. Mm-hmm. Like you like even like rival like fans like say like I hate Embiid, but he's also hilarious. Like
yeah,
he's like the guy everyone wants on their team, and I'm so glad we have him. God bless Joel.
That's why Pacers fans were chanting overrated.
Yeah, when funny. The line. I can't wait for them corny. To get bounced in the first round again. Have fun with your small market mess.
But yeah. We talked about
coastal this. Liberal elite here checking in.
We talked about
this. We hate the Midwest.
We talked about this in our group meet, the NBA refs turning to Twitter to
awful idea.
Help calls.
Awful idea.
Atrocious.
Is it literally help calls awful though, idea. Or is it just like a is it just like an open dialogue
I feel
where like someone can complain on Twitter and they can get an automatic? Because the broadcast can't always say it.
Yeah.
Some of the broadcasters are in a tough spot where they don't want to necessarily like crap on the refs because the league would get obviously upset about that. So I think this might just be more of a way for like a fan.
Yeah, but to they already have the NBA ref Twitter for that.
I don't think this is going to be like Joe from Delco is going to be able to call in and like swing Sixers games, you know?
Well, I don't think that it's going to be, like, a deciding factor, but I do think that it's going to kind of, like, refs are going to look at it and maybe see, like, because they don't get all the angles that we get, right? And if that's the case, then, I mean, it could kind of help.
I'm just going to be honest here. I don't think basketball refs are that bad.
No, they're not.
They're easily the best of the four.
Because I think basketball generally... It's a sport that has pretty clear defined rules, and there's no heavy contact like in football, where it's like, well, that's an illegal hit, that's not an illegal hit.
I think the reffing controversy, like calls aren't made in the NBA kind of deal, is like just really, really exploited on a very few minor incidents. Like the missed call on KD, like running out of bounds for 5 steps.
That's egregious. Like that's a mistake.
People not understanding.
That's not happening every night.
People not understanding the travel rule. For like watching James Harden play, right?
Yeah.
Because you get 1 step like with your like before the gather, and then you get like your actual.
I will say the one
gather.
Issue with that though is we've seen that called on other people, which is why it confuses people. Though
it's not a problem of bad refereeing; it's the consistency of the refereeing in the NBA. Because there will be a game where one ref calls it super tight.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're giving technical fouls for like no reason. Like you see one game. You know, Ben may get a dunk and stares down somebody for 5 seconds, doesn't get a call.
Yeah, opening night.
Yeah, he does it. He does it the next night in a bigger game on a national stage, and he may dunk on somebody. He yells, stares at him for like 2 seconds, and gets a tech. Like it's the consistency that's the issue. Yeah, he does. It's a consistency issue. It's not a quality issue.
Yeah. At least in the NBA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think out of the major four,
they're the best.
You would honestly say like that's probably the best. And again, I think it's just the nature of the game itself. Mm-hmm. Like, there's less room for error, I think. And I think basketball already is such like a fast pace, so many points scored that like if someone that misses a call that on like one play, it's not like in football where that can change the entire game. You know, I know we keep going back to the Eagles and Cowboys, whatever, no clear recovery, but that changes not only that game. you could argue that the course of the season. Yeah. Know, like, it hinges on that.
That changes the seeding of the playoffs.
Agreed. In basketball, Kevin Durant steps out of bounds. Obviously, you know, maybe the Warriors end up losing that game. I think they ended up losing anyway.
Yeah, actually. They did lose. Yeah. They did lose.
So, yeah, at the end of the day, it doesn't even matter. You know, like, it's just, you know, obviously that can matter in, like, a finals or a playoffs, but generally speaking, I think the missed calls or any mistakes made are less impactful than in a sport like football or even baseball.
That's what your head coach is for. You know, you tell the players, just play the game. The next time one of the refs are down here near me, I'm going to say something to them. Watch out for the rest of the game.
Can I talk to you for a minute? Hey,
I do the same thing when I coach lacrosse. A ref comes down, he misses a couple calls.
Dom slips 20s in pockets. That's what he does. I see.
The ref comes down. I'm not yelling at the ref, but I'll say, Yo, look out.
We got Markel Fultz, everybody.
I told you. Tom.
Guard Markel Fultz has returned to Philadelphia to continue his shoulder rehabilitation with the Sixers, league sources tell ESPN. No timetable yet on a return to the lineup.
Told you we were getting Markel news whenever he retweets those tweets, baby.
But, yo.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but like that's really nothing new. Like that's kind of what I expected. Oh, he's continuing his rehab, and we're gonna get a delayed timetable on his recovery.
Yeah, well, so he followed this up with a quote tweet. Jesus, man, I can't read today. Basically saying he's been undergoing therapy in L.A. The Sixers team has been out there with him, their medical staff, but now he's coming back to Philly to try and ramp up for an eventual return to the season.
What if he returns and just starts yakking shots like?
You'll hear my longest yeah boy ever.
My biggest disappointment is the medical staff's coming back.
Yeah.
Hey, man. One thing, did you know that somebody on the medical staff used to work for FC Barcelona? I think like our head of medical staff used to work out over there.
Get that juice, baby.
So
Charles Barkley had a weird call out to whoever the masseuse is. He's like, hey, I know that guy. He like name dropped. He's like, he's a great masseuse. Yeah, we'll see.
Gotta love it.
That HGH, that Barcelona ad.
Speaking of slipping 20s, the Eagles slipped $1 million to Nick Foles.
I saw that.
Since he missed out on his incentive by like 0.31%.
Four snaps or something.
He got his $1 million. And then they also fired let three coaches go. Most notably the defensive line coach, who was also Fletcher Cox's college defensive line coach. So that's the only one I'm kind of like iffy on him leaving. Chris Wilson, Gunter Brewer's gone. Bye. Thank you for your 1 year. I'm glad he's gone because the wide receivers were terrible this year.
Why lose the defensive line coach? Was that really in an area that
his contract expired, and it wasn't necessarily like them firing him. I think he might just be seeking another opportunity elsewhere.
Yeah, going somewhere else.
And then the assistant offensive line coach is also leaving. His contract ran up, and I just feel like he's going because he doesn't see a clear path to becoming the actual offensive line coach with Jeff Stoutland here. But we'll have at least three new coaches next year, and the biggest one's the wide receiver coach because the Eagles will now be on their fifth wide receiver coach in 5 years. Got to figure that out.
Yeah. I wonder. I don't know enough about NFL to say, but I wonder if there's other teams that struggle with the wide receiver I think it's a hard coaching job.
Is it that, or are these guys getting other opportunities elsewhere for other jobs, like better jobs, like an assistant coach or an offensive coordinator or things like that? Well, because every year you see at least like 4 to 5 offensive and defensive coordinators get a shot at a head coaching position. So obviously those are spots that you need to fill. So you're looking at guys like, for the offensive coordinator jobs, running back coaches, wide receiver coaches, quarterback coaches. I mean, hell, that's how Dougie got his job.
And you saw, even just looking at the 3 years of Doug, Greg Lewis was the wide receiver coach year one. He was obviously pretty bad. He's now the wide receiver coach with Andy Reid.
Yeah.
Granted, look at the talent that Greg Lewis was dealing with year one with Doug and the talent that he's dealing with wide receiver-wise in KC.
And how are they doing right now in KC? Yeah.
And you look at the talent. You got Sammy Watkins there. You got Tyreek Hill there. You got a whole bunch of big-name wide receivers out there where year one with Doug, it was Jordan Matthews.
Yeah.
And then last year, it was Mike Groh. He was fantastic as the wide receiver coach. And then, obviously, Frank Reich got hired late by the Colts as their head coach because Josh McDaniels left. that opportunity. So then we had to hire in-house because it was too late during the offseason to get anybody. So then Mike Groh gets elevated to offensive coordinator. You bring in Gunter Brewer, who a lot of people thought was going to be good because he was Mac Hollins' wide receiver coach at North Carolina, and then Mac Hollins didn't even play this year. So I think they just need to figure out what they're going to do with the wide receiver coach position, because I think it's vital with the talent that this team has at wide receiver.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
Bad.
Oh, God. That was terrible.
For those of you listening on the audio version, we just watched someone's ACL get destroyed.
Hector Bellerin.
Got a feel for that, man. Looks like Arsenal's going to start playing three back.
But, yeah, those are the Eagles' coaching updates. We'll have more in-depth Eagles offseason news. Like Wednesday, we announced our NFL draft show is coming after the Super Bowl and all that good stuff.
Can we talk about the Flyers a bit?
Carter Hart's the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
Yeah, so I went to the game on Wednesday. Whoo! Carter Hart had an amazing game. So the Flyers are on a two-game win streak, so that's nice. But this game against the Bruins, and if you didn't know, because not too many people are paying attention to the Flyers except for the diehards now, because we're in last place. Not anymore, because we won. So they won 4-3. So I didn't even think they were supposed to win this game. Did you watch it?
Not.
I did.
Yeah, so defensively we look good. Mm-hmm. Like, our stick checking was very good. We you know, depossessed Boston fairly well throughout the entire game. Carter Hart stood on his head for the most part. We had a slow start, but we came back. Couturier was playing amazing. Our power play looked good. Our penalty kill was...
Back-to-back nights of hat tricks.
Yeah. And our penalty kill...
has looked far better.
Ridiculous. It looked phenomenal that night.
Which is weird.
You know...
considering that was, like,
the worst part of the team. Jordy Lotero was going through some emotional problems because he's probably going through some cocaine withdrawal.
Sniffing but, issues?
Okay. Yeah.
Whoa. Alleged. Alleged.
He's actually going to a federal trial with it.
Alleged still. He has not been convicted.
Gotta love that the
there
Philadelphia...
There are charges levied against him, but... Laterra's not been convicted. And by the way, he wasn't in that house. It's just a house that he owned.
Gotta love you.
We've all owned some property that a kilo of cocaine has just happened upon and some other contraband. That's all happened to
us. You gotta love that the Philadelphia Flyers have a guy who's indicted on cocaine charges is still playing with them.
Alleged cocaine charges.
He boarded a guy to none other. This guy almost snapped his neck.
It was a terrible...
And you know, he got a 5-minute major. We held the Boston Bruins to, you know, no goals in a 5-minute penalty over the course of two periods. Mm-hmm. We ended the first period and started
and
the second.
Like 2 minutes in the third period.
We ended the second into the third, like, and it was just awful. But we played some hard-nosed defense, and mm-hmm. it looked really good. I just hope that, you know, they keep this momentum going.
I think the biggest weird thing going on with the Flyers right now is the Dale Weiss situation. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't been keeping close attention to, like, the roster moves or, like, what the front office
they
has
waived
been doing.
Dale Weiss the other day, and then he cleared waivers, and then they told him, because obviously they're playing in Montreal today, they told him to stay home.
And skating by himself
and
at practice. Just,
yeah, skating by himself at practice.
Yeah.
And then,
hold up.
So... either there's a trade, like, in the works, which you're not going to get much for Dale Weiss, but, mm-hmm. or something's just weird.
I don't know what's going on. Maybe. There's a lot of weird things that have gone on this season with the Flyers, so I'm not surprised that other things are going on. I'm just more worried about how they're playing in games right now. Regardless of the roster moves or whatever, you know, I have my opinions on who should be traded and who should stay, but, you know... all I'm hoping for are the guys that we've invested in that are young and our veterans and our captain, who, you know, I will never, ever slander. They just, you know, keep up a good form of play. You know, I want to see Carter Hart play like this more. He, you know, that glove save where he just snatched it from right on the stick, like, it was beautiful.
Remember when playing in the NHL was going to ruin Carter Hart's mental confidence and break him?
He looks like he's poised and he's our goalie for the future. I want to see Nolan Patrick keep up, you know, some decent play. You know, he kind of went into a sophomore slump. He played very well last year. This year he's not as good. You know, he's been going down to the Phantoms, coming this back. Oscar Lindblom, though, he's impressed me from the few really games good. I've watched. So, I just want to see them keep it up. You know, they gotta keep this aggression.
Or you could say it with me. Ready? Tank.
We gotta blow it up. We have to blow it up. But no, what I mean by that is we don't have to win. We can still lose games, but I want to see the guys that I care about for the future of this team continuously play
one shift this season.
I wanted to see Gritty on Wednesday lay a couple kids out on Mites on Ice because he was doing laps around. And he ran into some kids, but he stopped himself before he knocked them over. I wanted to see him just plow through. Maybe they had a word with
him, and like, all right, like you can like spray water on the kids and like, kind of give them like
splash some ice,
some white washes or something. Can't really check them.
Yeah, they're like in the middle of playing in front of everybody at the Wells Fargo Center. Like you don't get to do that all the time, and like you're gonna get killed by Gritty. Like, they only get, like, 3 minutes to play anyway.
Mites on Ice is my favorite.
I love Mites on Ice. I kind of feel bad, though, because you've sent, like, 30 kids out on the ice, and only, like, 4 of them touch the puck ever.
Hey, I don't care.
You got the one kid who's super good, and he's playing, and then you got the other kid who's got the GoPro, but he's not that good.
Have you ever seen when they do the shootouts?
Yes, I have.
They're like older kids. Those are intense, dude. Those are like everyone gets into it.
Yeah.
I have to throw a beer can on the ice for that one.
I know you saw it because I put it on the story. But when I pulled up to the game, because I got these tickets as a gift, so I didn't know where I was sitting. But I went. My tickets were literally right next to Dylan Mazzola's like family season tickets. So I come up and I'm just like, hey, his seat was literally right next to mine, and we watched the game together.
And he lost his hat. It's a
beautiful moment. Yeah, he lost his hat.
He threw it.
It was actually kind of funny because everybody that was with us, I think he was with his brother.
Yeah.
And who I was with, they had a Konecki jersey. I had Giroux. He had Coots, and then his brother had Ghost. So like, we were sitting there like, we almost have a whole line. Like, this really is, like, could be a starting line.
Don't tell Laterra that.
You should. Yeah, he might not get
all
the...
all the cocaine references up where we were sitting, it was classic. It was great.
It really came Can't out that second intermission really revamped. It's weird.
Can't wait for season 3 of Narcos.
Season 2, Narcos Mexico. Season
Narcos 3. Flyers?
Season 3.
Narcos. Did you watch Narcos Mexico? It was good.
No.
Not as good as the Columbia edition.
But, I didn't watch either.
So. You should really get on
it. It's on my list of things to watch.
I have a lot of things I need to watch.
True Detective as well.
I tried getting into that for the first season, and then I just kind of...
How do you try to get in the first season? The first season is amazing.
I don't know.
They're an anthology series, too. It's not like you follow... Like, it's not like it carries over.
Yeah, I know. Dude, I know. It's a different one every season. Dude. But I'm just waiting for the summer, so Game of Thrones comes back.
April, baby. What are you talking about?
It was spring, yeah.
Ain't no summer.
It's excited.
I've been.
I cannot wait.
Not watching the trailer because I don't want anything spoiled for me. I just want to go in completely blank. I'm gonna rewatch and catch up, but we're a long ways off from that.
Seems like we're a long ways off of finding out when Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are gonna
just wake me up.
Hibernate like a bear. Manny Machado's dad came out though because we reported Lozano's statement on Wednesday, and now Manny Machado's dad made that statement look foolish because Hector Gomez, who's been tweeting out all that stuff from the Dominican Republic network that he works for, this is a direct quote from Manny's dad. Manny has received offers from different teams: the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Phillies. Now there's a lot of interest from the White Sox, and apparently there is a mystery team because it was uncovered by Sports Illustrated that it's the Padres.
I mean, no shit, he's getting like offers from a bunch of
teams.
You're right.
Everybody
wants
him. But that's not what's been reported, right, though. We've only heard that the Phillies and the White Sox made an offer. We were told that the Yankees did not make an offer at all.
At all.
Well, yeah, his dad's probably...
And the Dodgers were not mentioned, and the Padres being the mystery team.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then Manny's dad also said there's a lot of hype around the White Sox right now. But then he also said the team that's going to sign Manny is the team that you don't hear a lot about. Which makes me think that it's the Yankees. Because everybody's been counting them out, saying, you know, they're not going to do it with all the signings they've made. And now,
but that was based off of the information that we got that apparently they didn't make an offer.
Right.
But he's saying that they did.
Yeah. And then you had the White Sox offer come out with the 7 years, $175 million. The Yankees should be more than able to pay more than that. So it makes me think Manny's going to the
Yankees.
I
just want Bryce. Bring in Bryce.
And Bryce is coming to the face.
And then make a big splash move in 2020. Like it's been written about. A couple people have now been saying that about the Phillies.
Well, yeah, there was a statement. I don't know where it came from, but Jack Fritz tweeted it, and it was, the Phillies have the ability to sign both, but they want to only get one
because
so they can leave the door open for Trout, and their dream scenario in one instance is to field an all-former MVP outfield of McCutchen in left, Trout in center, Harper in right.
That would be insane. Like, sign me up, because you'll put Reese on first base, and
eventually Scott Kingery at second.
Yeah.
You'll have Gene Segura at short, Alec Bohm at third is the guy they drafted this year, and you'll have Jorge Alfaro at catcher, and Aaron Nola is your starting pitcher.
Yeah. Sign me up for that.
Yeah.
Yes, please. I would love that. I would love that. Did you see the Gabe Kapler interview on MLB Today?
It was a good interview. I suggest any Phillies fan go
that. Very good.
He hinted at a lot of things that got talked about in the meeting between the Phillies and Harper, because Brian Kenny brought up that, you know, John Heyman said they hit it off and everything. It was like they talked about, you know, training. They talked about food.
They joked about a couple things. Yeah.
The biggest thing that stuck out to me was training, because it's like obviously they're talking about what his training regimen is.
I really like the comments that he made about early on last year. Mm-hmm. And that was something that we were even talking about when we were like going to a couple games and stuff like that, and how, you know, people weren't happy with the decisions he was making, and remember we were talking about like you have to find that happy medium between the analytics and the feel of the game.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that. He said, you know, I wanted to make sure that we stayed the course. I didn't want to make any knee-jerk decisions that kind of went away from, you know, the principles that we set as a team. But then at the same time, you know, as it went on, he kind of realized that not only do we have to do that, but we also have to look into the emotions of the players and how they're feeling, because if that's the case, if they really don't want to bat in, say, the seventh spot, even though it may be a tactical advantage, you can't do it, because in the long run, it probably won't work out for you guys. And I really like that he kind of explained himself after just doing it. Everybody was so confused, and it brought him so much hate. But, I mean, he brought the Phillies to first place for a while.
Yeah.
And then we kind of crashed and burned.
And he talked about that, too. It was like mid-August we were in first place.
Yeah.
I also like what he said about Sir Anthony Dominguez, too. Because, you know, now that we have David Robertson in the fold, it's not forcing Sir Anthony to go out there and be, you know, that gunner that you need for one batter, you know, pitching him out there for multiple innings. He can do whatever now,
it's
because
just,
you have a guy at the back with him.
It's a matter of finishing the job now, and that's just what it is.
And he talked about the possibility of the opener, which I don't have a problem with if your team doesn't have starting pitching. The Phillies have starting pitching, so I'd rather not see openers with this team.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good concept, and he talked about that. Like, you know, you want to have your guys comfortable with that concept, and you also want to have your guys comfortable in general.
Yeah.
So
I like that. So what you're saying is, because I don't think I listened that far into the interview, but so what you're saying is he'll have, instead of like a closer for a pitcher, you have an opener who pitches like
Tampa
three.
Tampa Bay did a lot of this last
like three
year.
Innings. I'm
not
guessing,
even
or?
Tampa Bay took a guy who was typically a closer in Sergio Romo last year, and he would pitch the first inning,
just
and
the first.
Then
inning.
They would bring in the starter.
Wow.
For the game.
So kind of
going through the top of the lineup, and
it's knowing that like you have bats on your offensive lineup, and then you're trying to stifle their first three or four batters.
Exactly.
So you can get a comfortable lead for your starter who gets to rest.
Exactly.
You know, get their first few warm up pitches on the lower end of the lineup. I kind of like that.
And then it saves them innings wise for later in the season. lets them be able to pitch deeper into the season.
I kind of like that. I like that.
It worked a lot, and the Rays were number one in baseball with strikeouts in the first inning. They were number one in batting average against in the first inning because you have a guy that's typically, for lack of a better term, a specialist-type pitcher coming in and just coming in for that portion of the game, and then the next go-round, your lineup's already looking to figure out a new pitcher instead of going through
a
second round of the lineup with the same pitcher. So it's an interesting concept, and I think teams that don't have the starting pitching depth like the Phillies do, like the Yankees, lower market teams like Tampa Bay who only really have three starting pitchers, mm-hmm. I think it works for them really well, and you saw it with Tampa Bay. They won 90 games last year. If they weren't in the AL East, they'd be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But definitely go check out that Gabe Kapler interview if you can. It should be on MLB Network's Twitter. It was about like 9 minutes and very good insight from Gabe. Good. And if you're anti-Gabe, it'll definitely
sway you on his side a little bit more. I mean, you know, we got on the Gabe train fairly early.
From day one.
And you know, welcome.
last bit of info here locally. I don't know if you guys saw DJ Campbell from Vineland Basketball.
Yeah, congrats, DJ.
50 burger last night against Atlantic City, a new Vineland High School single game record.
50?
50 points.
He had 9 threes, right?
9 threes.
He's a certified bucket. He really he is.
I've seen him play in person a couple times. He is.
And not to kind of downplay, you know, scoring 50. Atlantic City is not that good this year.
Yeah.
They've been getting killed. Millville held them to like 15 points and a half.
Yep.
Like, really? Atlantic City is not that good this year. Yeah, because they just have freaks of nature, like, athletically. And then they may not have the best ball skills, but
in high school, like, if you can jump higher than someone, you're
good. Gene does a good job of getting his kids to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a couple, like, when I was in high school, 6'7", 6'10 kids on your team who are just freaks athletically, and they work hard, they're just going to beat you. I don't know. I haven't seen Atlantic City play live, so I don't really know about the kids on their team. But, no, Russo's been doing a good job coaching Vineland this year. You know, DJ's a hell of a help.
The focal point.
Yeah, obviously. And, you know, it doesn't look like teams can really stop them. Yeah, that was big shout-out.
Yeah.
Big shout-out. 1,000 points, 50 points against AC. That's nice. They're doing good. How many losses do they have?
Not 100. I can pull that
up. I think it's,
only
a couple. Millville played the prep last night.
How did that go? I saw
they lost by 13. Their starting point guard Rynell, he was 27 points away from 1,000.
Going into today's game, he was 6 away from the all-time points record at Millville.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing well.
I covered him when he was a freshman.
Yeah, he's good. And he's very good. When I worked them out in the fall, he was
nasty.
And you could tell, I could tell that, you know, it's just fall open gym practices, and I was just there to supervise. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're kind of goofing around by the end of practice, but he was trying to dunk on everybody.
Yeah, he's
the
star.
The last day of those, he dunked on somebody that closed the practice out. It was amazing. I ended the scrimmage right there. I was like, "Now we're done. Get out of here."
Too
was,
good.
Vineland
six
the gym
and
down.
Yeah. Vineland 6-4, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. They got that loss to Millville. Millville beat Vineland. By like what was it? Like only 6 points or something like that. Vineland came back.
And Vineland had that weird loss early in the season.
That's because they had a new coaching staff and they kind of had the they had to get used to everything. Yeah. So. No, I'm actually kind of excited to possibly see that as a playoff matchup because I think that Vineland will make playoffs. Millville's definitely making playoffs. Mm-hmm. They're like, what, 11-3 now?
Yeah, around that.
So that'll be – if that matchup happens, that'll be a fun
that'll
game.
That'll be fun for sure.
I didn't get to go to the Millville-Vineland game at Millville, so when it comes to Vineland, I'm definitely going to be there.
That'll definitely be good. But shout-out to DJ because
that
was wild. Wings play tonight. We'll have a post-game show on Outside the Box after the game.
Not feeling too good.
It's going to be tough. We talked about it on the preview show that they just got to play better on the power play. You can't go 0-for on the power play if they want to win. But they play in Buffalo
we only have a couple certified scorers on our team, and that's the part that is kind of annoying. You know what I mean? We went out and got Crowley, which is good because you need another guy.
He's unreal.
But you know, when you have just him and Hall and Cloutier, and those are really just your guys, what else happens? You know, Matt Rambo's good for a goal every now and then. Cloutier
disappeared last week. He only had 2 assists. And yeah, you need him to be more productive.
You need him to at least match that with the same amount of goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully, it's going to be a tough game. But
they kick off at 7:30 in Buffalo.
Y'all know my pick.
And we'll have our post-game show after the game for sure.
Josh Burns is going to torch him.
It's a rematch of week one, so we'll see.
He's going to torch him.
But I think that's going to wrap things up for this edition of the show. Got to give a shout-out to our sponsors, Main Auto LLC, Hoffman Farms and Greenhouses, Ducharme's Pro Foot. Like I said, we will be there next Saturday. Security 21, Wainwright Bernhardt Funeral Home, and Paul J. Gillespie Incorporated. This has been episode number 99 of Underground Sports Philadelphia. We will catch you guys on Wednesday. Peace.